HBR is primarily a journal which provides a way to present models that consultants develop that speak to categorizing human activity, and then further, how they can make money or help, in many cases, gain power over them. And then they propose a new solution in the article that's a package program that they hypothesize, because usually without proof, that it fits all people for all time. It's the source and the driver to find a better model that these articles are about. It's the drive, in fact, for research and finding the best definition of categories we can put people in that drive much of it. So there are so many important questions that get ignored because of the idea of models themselves.
Business Second Opinion Podcast digs deep to explore questions about business and business practice. Ones you may not know you need to be asking, but we think you should. And in the process of examining them, we give you a second opinion. Usually, as you know by now, a contrarian opinion, but one that's well-tested and proven to give you the outcomes you want without the nasty side effects. I'm Zach Swartow, and with me as always is Carol Sanford, our in-house positive contrarian, responding to big hard questions with a radically different take. Hey, Carol.
Hi, Zach.
So, Carol, we're on to part two today, discussing paradigms of value. So I want to give a little bit of context to our listeners here to bring them up to speed from last time. So last time we covered the idea that all categories abstract and destroy innovative capacity in people. What's more, connecting to customers is a key source for innovation, and categorizing them flattens them into nameless, faceless boxes, leaving business leaders to try to claw back most of what's lost through constant problem solving rather than reconsidering a different approach. Carol, how'd I do? Anything you want to add here?
No, I think that's great. I think we were at a point last time at the end where we thought that this article had so much more to offer in terms of examining how thinking affects what we could see. So we decided to split it into two because we were looking a lot more at value itself. And value is held in this article as an exchange between the buyer and seller. A broader exchange than price and value for sure, but still a transactional exchange. It was really brought to us because they felt like we needed a model to tell people more bases that they needed to cover. But the model itself is driven by a particular paradigm, and that's what I want us to look at this time.
Yeah, you know, I actually often use thinking through paradigms to get myself unstuck in our company. So when designing a scope of work for a new client, for example, I know I'm in an extract value paradigm if I'm preoccupied with charging them the highest possible price for like the least amount of work. And if I were to move up a level, I know that I'm in a rest disorder mindset if I'm clamping down on every single aspect of the process with incredibly restrictive rules and regulations for how we approach our work together. So if I were to move up again from the doing good level, I'm starting to consider other forms of value that I might provide to the client, such as social returns like trust and network connections, environmental benefits, and so on. And from a regenerative paradigm, the questions I begin to ask myself definitely start to look different. At this level, I'm considering the entirety of the systems within which our clients are nested, their suppliers, their customers, their beneficiaries, and the aims that each have to seek to transform what storytelling experiences mean for their customers using their medium of games or film, for example.
Yeah, so what you're actually doing is you're starting, when you get to a regenerative level, imaging the whole that you're working with existing in a living system. You're starting with it as the process and moving deductively down into how it works, how things connect. You're not aggregating together a set of categories that are built by just looking at a bunch of folks and figure out what they have in common and creating some niches or some way to describe it. Then what you're dependent on is just what you can see and your own limits of understanding. We suggest that people start with a framework, and this is not new to our listeners, not a model, but a living systems framework, which you were describing. And in fact, paradigms is a living systems framework. It lets us look at how things change and move so we can see where we are in it. The whole idea of paradigms in any other framework is all about being able to connect an idea to it and differentiate, like the one we're working on here. How do we move value into values? And by the way, how do you define value, Zach?
That's a good question. So So let's start. What is value? So the definition is it's usually a price equal to the intrinsic worth of a thing, coming from the late 14th century, or the degree to which something is useful or estimable. So this is a kind of a quid pro quo worldview, I think, where price equates with intrinsic worth, like esteem or respect. And this is all about being important or worthwhile, I think.
Yeah, and it's really hard, I think, when you look at the usual definitions to understand that value and values is a term that is relative, not to one another. You know, that's how we talk about it, this value compared to that. But you can really see the relative nature of understanding value when you use different paradigms or different worldviews. So value exchange in the extract value paradigm that you just spoke about, we can get an example from what you talked about where we get very focused on the money and maybe less effort, becoming efficient. In the entropic paradigm of the arrest disorder, it means that we're really trying to reduce harm or waste or some way. And the meaning rarely moves into trying to extend life. You're just trying to outlast the average. Do good is really an aspect of values. So this first time we switch. The first two tend to be more about value. They might be driven by some of the do good, but what changes at the do good is what's really important and has a more specific worldview of what is right and good and maybe right and good for all if you can think that well. At the regenerative level paradigm, it's defined as what works for an ecosystem vitality and evolution, not for it just as a sub-entity. So it goes from individual or small set entity, and it gives it then to beyond just the classification we make into a living systems view. And so it's the same in paradigms, but if you look at it in values, you can see where it shifts from just the idea of the value something has, the way it's usually defined, to the values that are inherent and the values that surround it.
So yeah, so let's look at different values or different levels from a business perspective, right? So when a business is thinking at the bottommost level, things are seen as assets. So the goal here is to protect or care for, to improve or leverage for more. This is the physical level at the bottom where everything equates with money compared to intrinsic worth. So assets are a way to measure with entropic consideration the price for sale. So Carol, how do we start to paint a whole picture here so we can give folks an entire framework that gives us paradigms of value?
Well, what I'm going to say is sometimes hard at the beginning to grapple with, but you can't do it by definition. You have to do it by imaging it working because living systems work. They are not a thing that are flat and the same. So if we really want to get a handle on a paradigm of value and values, we have to learn to image whatever it is we're talking about, working inside of whatever context it's in. And that tends to be taking it to the most encompassing view we can conceive of and still hang on to things. So we're using right now, you and I today, the paradigm framework itself as the way of understanding how a framework can help. We're asking the question of the value in terms of what it looks like when we shift paradigms. Value is its own ordering based on different paradigms. And I think it'd be fun if we really look at how those different paradigms cause the idea of values themselves and value to shift. So, Zach, what's the base paradigm and the most limiting view? And how do you see that as relating to the idea of value?
Yeah, so this is the basis for extract value, which we already, it turns out, includes the term value. It's at this level that's really about value absorbing and extracting. And here the whole idea is to view what will extract the most value or is absorbing the value and not up level from it.
And what are you designing for and what are you measuring when you're extracting value?
Yeah, so I think we aim for things like better performance of our company or buyer loyalty and financial performance, which is what this model is really based on. We need to stay in business, of course, but when we design from this, we're pretty limited in our thinking on making a difference in the world or a difference for our employees. This model looks to add an additional value to the customer for a higher return, but does not speak to the highest meaning for the people in the company. At the end of the day, it's all really transactional.
Meaning, transactional meaning, that the major view of extract value is value to the seller. We need to get a value return, which takes the top of the, it's kind of like the lowest of the lowest paradigm, and we need to shift it up a little bit if we're going to include anything else. But it still focuses on getting more for the business, not considering how the consumer or any stakeholder gets more value. So what's the next level, Zach?
Let's call it value sustaining. We want to stop anything that does not bring value. The question really here is, in whose eyes, though? The company's value or the customer? Often, it's only about cutting inefficiencies to get better net margins. And so the idea of value added seems to fit well here. Can we add something for which we get a return?
Yeah, and I want to say really clearly what you just said, value added. It's like value plus the ED. It's different than value adding. And here I see that the value consideration is beginning to get good at adapting to threats and changes, the external forces, the opportunities that present themselves. That's a different kind of value and values. That's part of this model in the Harvard Business Review we're looking at based on Maslow's hierarchy, but it's someone else's job in the company to figure that out. But they do want to add value to maintain and sustain a good relative competitive position relative to investors, buyers, government situations, a constituent base of its government. So you're always working. I think your word sustaining is a good one here. So Zach, what's the next level of paradigm if we're talking about value?
Yeah, so you often talk, Carol, about going from value added to value adding, as you're saying. And that's where the business connects with the effect produced in, say, the stakeholder's use of the offering or the offering itself. The model has no connection to anything beyond the customer's request or needs via a survey, where people are taught to listen well and understand their current existence and how to improve it. This is all about getting rid of their frustrations, meeting their priorities, and overcoming compromises. But what we want is value-improving processes, which engage with the life beyond these single transaction points. It allows design of systemic offerings rather than, once again, single point offerings, like the point where your product exists.
Well, yeah, and that reminds me, I mean, that's exactly why Apple has always been successful. It's not building a product up from one value node at a time, as is implied here in this article. The model is a misrepresentation of their success, even though it cites them. And I suspect the same is true for other examples. Luckily, they do not take credit for those changes of Apple themselves. Their opening examples are not doing building blocks to a product. We're looking at the ecosystem of the lives of those that are using and putting it together in a non-fragmented system. The article, I think, is a misunderstanding and a misrepresentation of how Apple conceives of product offering design. So keep going, Zach, on this value-adding paradigm, value-improving paradigm.
Yes, this seems to be where value becomes values, as you kind of indicated earlier, where we ask what matters to the life of people who buy from us. This is what you're describing with Apple. They went to dorms and engaged with students and faculty, not listening to what they said they wanted. The authors are using survey research, but with a new template of categories. With this paradigm, Apple was watching an ecosystem and seeing with great skill patterns at work across their entire lives, particularly on campus.
Yeah, Apple is not the only one. Also, we did this with teams at Seventh Generation, and they learned to see the dynamic and living processes of people they were committed to making their lives better. And they saw how these life processes, like not looking at the product, but how people are engaging, the product is one small aspect, but it's important. And how things all fit together. They were not making an ego system, but they were working really to create an improving system, which is what we said we're working at this level. They were looking at what touch customers, not what they would speak to necessarily and say to them, but more importantly, what they could understand from watching the engagement with it, not a survey, but an experience, actually moving into feeling the experience, which is, and then avoiding categorizing it. So let's go to the most encompassing paradigm, Zach.
Yeah, so the top level is value generating and really regenerating. It has to take into account the real capacity that can be evolved for the customer versus problem solved, which also underlies the elements of the value pyramid. It's based on the essence of the buyers in their potential of what they are striving to realize. This sounds also like what Apple's doing, looking at potential and asking, what is the essence of this situation, like students in a learning situation?
Okay, so you asked me a question a little while ago about what were we doing in seventh generation. I think I can speak to that a little better now. And what I'm going to say also was true of Colgate and DuPont and many other companies that I write about and was immersed in deeply myself in the creation. We work to find the essence of buyers, not by demographic clusters like the ones they're using here in the elements of value and what this model promotes, not even by categories of any type that you could slot buyers into, by what we call value nodes or essence nodes that come from starting with specific buyers' lives and understanding how their lives work. We put them together, and you've heard me talk about this before, something called market field teams. These are composed of company employees and roles responsible for discerning the users' lives, how they work, and about implementing creative systems designs to support them. And everyone in the company is in one of these teams connected to real customers. It turns out that there are also commonalities, but you're starting with the specific essence of real people that emerge. But if you don't start with the categories and put them into it, you're less likely to get a fragmented segment that is used to assess something. They're based on the essence of a family of buyers. We ended up with essence connection between among natural parents, and you would have never found a category if we tried to name a natural parent at the beginning. We wouldn't have been able to do so. We would have ended up probably with demographic or saying they were deep green, which actually seventh generation did. But that doesn't allow for really designing in a way that we were able to, where we got new products, product systems, buyer systems, and collaboration with distributors and with stores that were working with these same families and dedicated to them. And here they were conscious of the connection between the health of the families and ecosystem health. All that came from exploring some specific customers we knew and looking at what their essence was. It then allowed us to educate the parents to aspire further and to understand more than a problem-solving survey ever can. And in fact, I have to always throw this in because so many of these people in the books and in Harvard Business Review and other places have quoted that this new level of understanding, this paradigm, resulted in growth of 35 to 65% per annum in revenue growth. And it also reduced the impact of their own footprint on Mother Earth and that of the consumer's footprint on Mother Earth.
And I would assume the meaningful lives of all those connected.
Absolutely.
Dear listeners, don't forget to keep in mind there are many resources to help you learn these four paradigms, which you were just pointed to, and the first three here to help overcome fragmentation, idealizing, and genericizing. We are going to put the paradigm graphic in the show notes just so you guys can have it handy. As a heads up, if you're a business, we invite you to join us at the Regenerative Business Development Community, where we apply regenerative, that is living systems principles-driven thinking, to strategy, leadership, and work design for human development. Nominations are now open for the Regenerative Business Prize, where you can get a free regenerative education with reflections from a panel on your business's integrity with the seven first principles. Look for the prize tab on the Regenerative Business Summit website, where you can submit yourself or other businesses you think would like to go through this process. You can find the guidelines for all this at the regenerativebusinesssummit.com, where you can also download the rubric from the prize page and learn about how to avoid greenwashing with your good deeds and offerings.
And there are many other ways to join us, including I've written 5 books. My newest one, The Regenerative Life, will be out March 10th. And you'll be able to engage with 9 roles, which you can transform in how you play in society. It can actually change the course of history. Plus, The Regenerative Life is leading to new communities which are already forming, include one just for women entrepreneurs, one for people who are writing and working about the regenerative economy, and more to come. Go look at carolsanford.com, and there you can find the books and many offerings.
And thanks again to our new sponsors, Guayaki, and your pursuit of regeneration with great integrity. We're going to be sending you all a Get a Second Opinion mug to hold your favorite hot or cold beverage. And if you want one of our Get a Second Opinion mugs, send us your topics on practices in business that need a second opinion. You can email us at carol@businesssecondopinion.com or find us on Twitter at @biz_second_opinion. If we use it to develop an episode, you get a mug. Also, your ratings and reviews on any platform help us find and spread the word. Sign up for our newsletter so you can also stay connected to the show notes and much more. And thanks as always to Numi T. They sponsor our show notes and the Regenerative Business Prize. Check out the Business Second Opinion website for more info on our show and join Numi T as a champion in your town at the Regenerative Business Summit. This has been Business Second Opinion.